It's the Daytona 500 on Sunday, the Super Bowl of racing, and it kicks off the final full-time year of NASCAR racing for Jimmy Johnson. What is his legacy? And not just in racing, but in all of sport. And Denny Hamlin has a chance to do something only five other drivers have done, and that's win the Daytona 500 for a third time. What are his chances of going back-to-back? We've got all that and some college football talk with Matt Baker of the Tampa Bay Times, and you'll hear my interview with Rays pitcher Brent Honeywell, who's coming off Tommy John surgery and an elbow fracture, but could be on the mound this season. And he'll give you his thoughts on the Houston Astros as well on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. All right, it's race week, baby. Daytona 500. It is on Sunday, and the guy who covers that and college football for us, of course, is Matt Baker, and he joins us now. Matt, it's going to be an interesting week, of course, or weekend over there in Daytona for a lot of reasons. You wrote a story, or we're working on a story for this Sunday that people should read on TampaBay.com and the Tampa Bay Times. On Jimmy Johnson, look, NASCAR has lost a lot of great names, right, a lot of legends over the last few years. Probably none bigger than this guy who's in his final year of racing. Just put in perspective just sort of what his legacy is in that sport or in sports in general, and also how he's thought of in around the garages.
Yeah, so obviously this is his last full-time season. He's going to be involved in racing in some capacities going forward, a race here or there, that sort of thing. And he's earned the right, obviously, to do what he wants going forward. I mean, you look, obviously, seven NASCAR championships is absurd. Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt are the only guys who can match that. 83 wins, a couple Daytona 500s. He's done just about everything you can accomplish. And I would argue, based on kind of the way NASCAR is right now, where the margins are so small, it's not like it used to be where somebody could just have a car that's that much better than everybody else.
Right.
It's not like that. So I would argue what Jimmy has done over his career, I think he's probably the greatest driver in NASCAR history, probably the greatest driver in North American history. And then I would go further. I put him alongside Tom Brady, Michael Jordan, Babe Ruth, that sort of thing, in terms of most dominant athletes in American sports ever. I mean, I think he has been that good when you look at, again, the era that he was in, how dominant he was for such a stretch. The seven championships is just absurd. And I think, he didn't really have a weakness. He won in different styles with the playoffs and the chase and the old formats and that sort of thing. He evolved over his career as well as anybody, and leaves he's going to leave a huge hole in the sport. I mean, you can go even further. The way he changed NASCAR. In NASCAR, you used to have kind of the reputation guys drivers drinking beer, smoking cigarettes, not athletes. Well, Jimmy changed that. I mean, Jimmy raced in the freaking Boston Marathon last year, and it wasn't like he was a bum either who just got a spot because of a Gatorade sponsorship. No, he is a very, very, very good athlete. You could put him, give him the right training, go back a little bit when in his prime, put him in any sport, and he would be okay. I mean, he's just that good of an athlete, I think. And then I guess, being at Daytona 500 Media Day yesterday or Wednesday, I went and asked everybody, what's your favorite Jimmy Johnson story? And what I found out was kind of surprising to me. I mean, I've talked to him before. He seems like a nice enough guy. I'm not going to pretend to know him as a human being. But sure, the people who do know him and who have competed against him and alongside him for years, I'll talk about what a genuine dude he is. And they back it up with stories. Martin Truex Jr. said, you ever need anything, you give Jimmy a call. I've heard from so many of the guys who... Alex Bowman, and now one of his teammates, said, I was on a different team. I had a really, we're a team that struggled, where if I could finish 25th that day, that was a really good day. And I had a really good day one time, finished 20th or whatever. Jimmy comes over to me and says, hey, I know your car wasn't very good, but you drove the hell out of that thing. Great job. So just imagine, at that time, Jimmy was, five-time champion or whatever, going to a young guy who just got 20th place or whatever, and going out of his way to talk him up and give him a high five or whatever. And everybody in the garage has that kind of a story. And that, to me, is kind of one of the legacies that Jimmy's going to have in the sport and in the garage, is just being in addition to being a champion, a great driver who pushed his sport to another level in terms of what was expected of the drivers, just being a really good dude that the sport's going to miss.
You know, and I mentioned at the top that they've, you know, over the last few years, Dale Earnhardt Jr., of course, Jeff Gordon. I mean, there's been a lot of guys.
Tony Stewart, Matt Kenseth, Carl Edwards.
I mean, it's just, yeah, it just doesn't end. So I guess, I mean, who is next, right? Who are the next big stars in NASCAR, and how much is this sport suffering maybe from the lack of those giants, you know, being there every weekend?
Oh, it's definitely suffering. I think to some degree, Jimmy was a great thing in NASCAR. I'm not going to say otherwise, but his domination also kind of put a little bit of fatigue. Oh, Jimmy Johnson's going to win again. I certainly know some fans who kind of felt that way. I mean, my dad being one of them. But yeah, as you go forward, you look at all those people. A generation of fans has lost the drivers that they grew up rooting for, and that's hard to replace. Just because, you know, there are guys who are really good. I mean, Martin Truex Jr. is a very, very good racer. Kyle Busch could race the heck out of anything and do really well. I mean, again, he's not on the Jimmy Johnson level, but he is a great, great driver. Who, when all is said and done, we might be talking about him as one of the best in NASCAR history too. The problem is there's not, you know, those are still kind of the older wave of who's in here now. I don't see a lot of the great younger drivers making waves. I mean, I think everybody's still waiting for Chase Elliott to go from a good driver to a great driver, and maybe he can start building the buzz and that sort of thing. Maybe same thing with Ryan Blaney, who's had some success with Team Penske, but hasn't kind of cross that echelon, and you know, those guys with their last names, their dad's history, maybe they can be kind of the bridges from the past to the future, but this hasn't quite happened yet.
One of those drivers, of course, as you mentioned, is Denny Hamlin, who has a chance to do something that hasn't been done very much in the race's history, and that is win his third Daytona 500. Of course, he's the defending champion, has some Tampa ties. Tell us about Hamlin and just what are his prospects for making history. How conscious of that is he?
Yeah, Denny Hamlin knows history. I mean, he's not a dumb guy. He was born in Tampa, moved to, I think it was Virginia when he was about 2 years old. Still has some family here in the Bay Area. He's won two Daytona 500s, and he's done that really by kind of transforming who he is. He came up in the short tracks, and that was who he was, and he kind of struggled over his early career. I think his average finish at Daytona was like 21.5 through the first 16 times he raced there. And then he started studying Tony Stewart and Dale Earnhardt Jr., who were always good at these tracks, your Daytonas and Talladegas. Yeah. And he started to figure out that they're really good at mitigating risk.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, that doesn't mean you don't take a chance and make a risky move. It means you're smart about when you do that. You're more calculated. So he just learned from that. If things start getting dicey and he feels that something is going to happen, he's okay dropping back in the pack. And let those guys duke it out up front. I'm going to stay in the back where if there's a big one, I'm not going to, you know, my chances of getting through it are better. So that way I'll be around on lap 180 and 190 with a chance to win it. So that's the type of stuff that he's learned over the years, and that's why he's won, you know, two of the last, what is it, four or five Daytona 500s, and should probably be in contention to win on Sunday. And if he does, he'd be the seventh driver in NASCAR history to win three of them.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, you mentioned Jimmy Johnson and just the athlete that he is, and I think people lose perspective, of course, of what it's like to compete in this sport from a physical standpoint. But you wrote a story about Ross Chastain, who's attempting to do something this weekend that might be a little crazy. And when you talk about endurance, he's going to have that and then some. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so he is going to try to race every race this weekend. So as we talk Thursday morning, there's the duels tonight. So if he makes it to the end, that's 60 laps, 150 miles. Mm-hmm. Then there's the truck race on Friday, 100 laps, 250 miles. the Xfinity race on Saturday, 120 laps, 300 miles. Then, again, if he makes it to the end, that'd be 200 miles or 200 laps, 500 miles for the Daytona 500. So that's 480 laps, 1,200 miles in 4 days. That's a lot. You know, we can debate whether NASCAR drivers are athletes and all of that, but that's a lot on your body. So, yeah. You know, I kind of asked him, how is he preparing for it? And, you know, obviously, you know, coffee in the morning, jog in the morning, trying to eat really healthy, go to bed early. He's got it. You know, he's from kind of in the Fort Myers area. It's, I think it's like an eighth generation watermelon farmer, which is a different story altogether. But he's got a ton of family over there. And, you know, he's kind of said, all right, well, when about time dinner's over, I got to go to bed because I got to rest. And there's some other things, too, in terms of, you know, he mashes the brake harder than the gas pedal at most of these tracks. So he's going to do more leg lifts and stuff on his right leg so it balances out. And you do the math in terms of how many times he's going to turn the car left versus how many times he's going to turn it right. So he's going to do some, you know, just kind of more workouts, turning the steering wheel right, not with the steering wheel itself, but just holding up a 20-pound weight, turning it to the right some, so that way his muscles kind of even out and his body will be in okay shape before and after.
How different is it if you know to handle the different, you know, vehicles in the truck series versus the Infiniti series versus the NASCAR race? I mean, it's a different type of driving, right? A little bit. Same track, right? But
same track. You're right. They're all just different in their own way. And, you know, obviously the Cup Series, that is the fastest and has its own challenges. But the trucks are a different kind. And the level of competition is different. The level of cars on the track is different. You know, just everything about it is different. And, you know, that's why one of the reasons why I talked about Kyle Busch, I think is going to be, you know, when his career is said and done, we'll talk about him as a great in the sport too, because he's been able to continue doing that across levels. I mean, he still races in some of the feeder series a little bit just because he wants to, and he's won more than 200 times across all three of the NASCAR National Series, which is a pretty remarkable achievement on his own.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be great race weekend, of course. Before I get you out, you cover college football for us. We haven't had a chance to chat in just a minute. Wanted to get your impressions or your thoughts on Mel Tucker, who, of course, was at Colorado, you know, has said some things about, you know, wanting to stay there, about transfers and other things. But look, I mean, I think like any of us, there's also the side where opportunity, you know, comes and a chance to double his salary and go to Michigan State, which I was surprised, you know, had, at least initially, it seemed a little trouble maybe getting their guy. What do you make of the whole Mel Tucker to Michigan State saga?
You know, Rick, I was about ready to make my case for why I should be the next head coach of Michigan State. Look, here's the thing, Rick. I'm from Big Ten country. I went to school in the Big Ten. I worked in Texas, Oklahoma, and Florida, which is some very nice high school football states.
Yeah.
So I think I could recruit there. I mean, it was seriously getting to that point where, like, who the heck wants this job? And there are some very valid reasons why. You know, with D'Antonio's exit, there are some major questions about the direction and the trajectory and everything that's gone on in the football program and the athletic department as a whole when you factor in some of the Larry Nassar stuff. So there are some issues there at Michigan State, which led them to the problems that they were in terms of how hard it was to get a coach. Maybe Mel Tucker will do fine. I mean, what, he won 5 games at Colorado? So I am, you know, the jury is still very much out. I think where he kind of erred was going so strong in the, I'm not going anywhere, I'm staying. Yeah. And I understand why he did it, because I understand that things change in terms of the money and everything changed. But it's just such a bad look to say, I'm staying, and then change your mind a couple days later. So I think that's, to some degree, I don't love it, the Jimbo Fisher approach of, I'll never talk about another job. I don't love it because sometimes I think it's disingenuous. Sometimes it would behoove somebody to get out in front of a story. But on the other side is, if you never talk about another job, then you're never in a situation where, you know, you're saying, what Saban said, I'm not the head coach, the next head coach at Alabama, and then leaves the Dolphins 2 days later or whatever. So in some case, silence is the best. It's just such a weird dance with the way these things played out, especially with the timing of this. It was just, it was just weird. And in a few years, if Tucker does well at Michigan State, I don't think many people will look back on this. And if Tucker doesn't do well at Michigan State, I don't think people will look back on it either. You know, what he does going forward is all that's going to matter with him and Sparty.
Yeah, D'Antonio did not leave him in a great situation. And, of course, the whole contract situation where he waited to get his $4.2 million or whatever it was probably also wasn't a good thing for Sparty.
It's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable the way these contracts are and the way schools continually get played. Now, it's easy for me to say here because I'm not an AD trying to get the guy that I think is going to win me games and championships. So it's a lot easier to second guess and say that. Right. But it's not like D'Antonio is the only coach in America that's been in for, you know, has had contracts where he's gotten big bonuses like that. And it's just, I don't know, after a while, you kind of think eventually something has to change with the sport where you're not going to have guys getting $4 million and then walking away 2 weeks later. And they're not, you know, the kind of sidecar of that is schools negotiating against themselves and giving big extensions and raises when their guy, you know, their coach isn't a hot commodity. There aren't people calling to take him. So, remember Jim McElwain got a raise at Florida early on and was out not much long afterwards. So that's the type of stuff that, you know, was one of the reasons why college football's in the issue it is it's a lot of ADs making decisions that are easy to first guess and really easy to second guess when they lead to situations like what happened with D'Antonio and Michigan State.
It's difficult contracts with all the buyouts and things like that. It's just kind of a mess right now with coaching in college football. But speaking of which, just get you out on this, I promise. Jeff Scott, look, I think he's brought a lot of energy to USF, if nothing else. Any gauge on sort of, you know, with the late start they had, what kind of recruiting class he was able to spackle together?
I it's incomplete. That's a bad answer. It's bad radio, bad podcast. But I think the same thing with him and Mike Norvell at Florida State. It's very much incomplete just because they had so little time to put things together.
Exactly.
I don't know how they're going to work out. I mean, you know, I think Scott's class was fine, all things considered. I think, you know, Norvell at Florida State, it was their worst of the rivals era if you look at the ranking.
That's
but you could also view that a different way. You can look at it in terms of in the early signing period era where, again, new coaches have been at such a disadvantage. His class, I think, was the, depending on how you look at it, fourth or fifth, sixth best of all the new coaches over the last 3 years. So you can glass half full, glass half empty kind of thing.
Sure.
It's just so hard to tell. I think, you know, I'm sure they got some good players in there that are going to help, but the real test to me is going to be what happens in the next recruiting class, because a lot of these guys are not going to work out just because that's the situation everybody was dealt. So how are Scott and Norvell going to be able to kind of recruit over them and recruit guys to replace them and recruit for the long-term health of the program? That's, to me, the better test of who these guys are as coaches and recruiters, not this February / last December. It's the next one.
That's right. They have to outlast all the turnover that they've had at those programs, and that's just something they'll have to do. Matt Baker will be at the Daytona 500 in race weekend, of course, and then you can read him in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com. Thanks, Matt.
You got it. Thanks, Rick.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Rays pitchers and catchers are in camp in Port Charlotte, and they'll be throwing off the mound. Of course, one guy that they're happy to see back in the fold anyway is Brent Honeywell. You remember he was one of their top prospects, and a couple years ago ended up having to have Tommy John surgery on his rehab. Last year he then had an elbow fracture, so that set him back even further. He's now on the recovery trail, and it looks like he'll be available to them possibly late May, early June. Really a bright young prospect, a guy that throws a screwball, has a lot of opinions. He's a very confident guy, And I had a chance to sit down with him at the Rays Fan Fest and chat with him, not just about where he's at in his rehab, but also some things that are going on in baseball, including his take on the Houston Astros and the cheating scandal. So here is my interview with Rays pitcher Brent Honeywell. All right, Brent Honeywell joins us now. And, Brent, it's great to see you, of course, back and throwing again from, I guess, 75 feet.
Yeah.
How do you feel right now? How are things progressing in terms of your rehab?
Things are going moving along really quickly, actually. Yeah. I was back to 90 feet this week.
Oh, wow.
I'll start back up on Monday, 4 days a week. So everything's been going in the right direction. I've had 4 or 5 really good days in a row. So
that's great.
We're looking up a little bit.
Well, you've been through quite an ordeal. Everybody knows, of course, the Tommy John surgery, and then you're working your way back, and you have the elbow situation. So I know it's a physical grind, right? I mean, that's the work you have to put in. But mentally, how have you been able to try to keep a handle on that?
I'd be lying if I said it was easy.
Yeah.
It's been tough. There's been a couple stretches where it's been the worst 2 years of my life.
And right.
There's been some stretches where it's like, you know, I wouldn't trade him in for anything, just for the sole fact being that, you know, the work that I did put in, I know is going to carry me a long way through this game. So I can't thank these guys enough here, especially Eric and the front office guys who have, you know, I can't thank those guys enough, especially our training staff who's been with me for the past 2 years. And from top to bottom, I know we got one of the best training staffs in the game. So I appreciate those guys.
Probably the hardest part is, of course, what you could do for this ball club when you're ready, when you're healthy again, and having to watch and not be out there to help them. That's got to be frustrating at times, right?
Yeah, that's my number one. That's the hardest part for me. I love baseball enough to where I love this game as a fan. Number one, then number two is being the player. And I watch a whole heck of a lot of baseball, and getting it taken away, even though I'm not out of the game, is
right.
It's tough. It hurt for a while. So, you know, I wouldn't trade it in for anything. So everything's been going well. And like I said, I appreciate everybody who's been with me along the way.
When you watch the Rays and you see what they were able to accomplish last year, how much will that carry over, do you think, in this clubhouse? You know these guys. You've been around a lot of them. You see the confidence growing. The expectations are there, but I think you're a ball club that's going to embrace that, right?
No doubt. I think, you know, from playing with these guys in the minor leagues, is the times that I did, is that, you know, when winning is contagious with us, and I think that's scary. It's scary because, you know, winning, it is contagious, and I know these guys, they got a taste of the postseason, and I think that, I mean, there's guys who win and only win on this team, and I know that, I know for a fact that we're going to have we're a tough team to handle.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch, you know, you think about it, a potential rotation, right? Blake Snell and Tyler Glass now, and then of course Charlie Morton, and then you come back. I mean, this is really building a staff that it's be tough to beat every series, right?
Right. Yeah. I think I said that last year too.
Yeah.
Whenever I was,
you predicted it. Yeah.
Battling back from the, I know these guys are strong, and I know that at the head of the rotation, you know, we got Snell, Glass now, and Morton. So it's, people cling to Charlie Morton, and Charlie is he's a nice guy to have in your clubhouse, and he's the other thing is he's 100% a good person.
Yeah.
And I think the number one thing, he likes to win.
Yeah.
I know, you know, when Snell, he came down to Durham whenever I was there in 17, and I just told him, I said, hey, man, like, we win here. Dude. Like, this is the number one thing we're doing. We're winning.
That's right.
And I know you got everybody on this team competes.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing, is that these guys compete at a very, very high level. And when you start, now, in my opinion, there's two things. You know, you play at a high level, but when you start competing and you just don't know how to lose.
Right.
It carries over,
right?
Yeah,
I mean,
no
that's
doubt.
What you guys won championships at Durham, and now the same group of guys are winning them here.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. Like I said, man, winning's contagious. And I was happy that those guys got to see the postseason last year. I really wish I could have been there.
Yeah.
But I was at home.
The atmosphere, though, I don't know if it came through, but this building was electric, like we have never seen
it
in 6 or 7 years.
Incredible. I mean, the thing is, you know, we win, man. Like, we're young.
Yeah.
We fight.
Yeah.
We win. And I think when the scary thing is with a young team is that when they smell blood in the water,
yeah,
and it's go time. And I think these guys, like I think I said a little earlier too, is like we've seen a lot more guys down here and that I've seen down here earlier on
in a while.
And I mean, that just tells me that we're ready to go.
Yeah. No doubt. Well, the success was great. Of course, you've had a lot of success. One of your big pitches everybody wants to talk about is the screwball, and you have a relationship with Mike Marshall, who I knew back, used to coach at St. Leo, yeah, and, of course, with the Dodgers and stuff. Tell us how that all evolved for you and the ability to throw that pitch.
Well, I think the easiest way to say it is that I've learned how to pitch at a very young age. I learned how to throw properly at a very young age, and a lot of people – my dad took a lot of time with me, and, you know, it just kind of evolved into the screwball. But, you know, it wasn't like, hey, this is a screw, I'm going to show you how to throw it. It was a whole two-year process,
right,
where it was, you know, this is the changeup. We're going to go into a changeup screwball, and then into the actual screwball itself. And I think when I enjoyed that, like, I enjoyed the process of learning how to do something, and it took me a while to figure it out. But
the
then
master,
again, I learned how to throw strikes that way.
Yeah.
I learned how to throw. I think that was the biggest thing, is that I was a strike thrower. But, Mike is Mike did a lot for this game.
Yeah, he did.
And I think it goes a little unnoticed, but, yeah, Mike did a whole heck of a lot for this game.
I noticed that you've added the junior to the jersey. Tell us about that.
Well, my dad played for the Pirates in 88 and 90, and a lot of the good ones have it.
Yeah, that's Griffey. True. Ken Griffey, yeah.
I mean, you know,
an ode to your father? And
yeah, it is. It's, you know, I got 59 on my back right now, but
yeah,
I've changed it to 45. I don't know if that's come out yet, but I changed it to 45.
Okay.
My dad played
that's
at
great.
45.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he gave me this game.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
you know, both of my parents have always, they know it. They just, I think both of them really know what this game means to me and what, how appreciative I am of everybody who's been along.
It's a nice gesture.
Part of the way.
Yeah. Okay, I know you had to watch a lot of baseball. Would rather have been out there playing while you're going through your rehab. Houston Astros, we saw them, you know, beat this team in five games. Then the story comes out as a pitcher. How hard is that to learn that the guys are stealing them that way? Everybody's trying to get signs right, but is that something you have to be aware of anyway? But this took it to another level, right?
I can't really speak on the, you know, do what to. I can't speak on. I was never there. I
right.
never got picked by using a camera.
Right.
I think it's wrong. I think it is. It's unfortunate, and I think it's wrong, and I got pretty strong feelings about it, and I think, you know, I think a lot of people do have strong feelings about it, and I think the other thing is too is that it affects people very differently.
That does.
Like, you're talking about putting guys in a position that were on that club that didn't need to be in that position, and
that's
you're talking
right.
about other people, like, now, okay, well, they play for different teams. It's like, yeah, you know, I think it was a little lax. I think the punishment was a little lax. We've yet to have anybody come out and really say, hey, you know, sorry about that. Or,
right.
You know, basically be remorseful at all.
Right.
You can tell me how accountable you were in and out as much as you want to, but the fact of the matter is that you took something away from someone's family, and not only that, is that you took something away from somebody's career.
And that's the thing. I think people, you know, don't realize that if I'm – you know, those are my numbers that I go to arbitration with. That's my profession. That's how I make my living. And you're doing something to affect me negatively that way.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I look at is that I'm coming back from two pretty critical injuries. And now knowing that that's still out there to be, you know, however, I would much rather face a guy that was on the sauce.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that from coming from me, that says
that
a
says
whole
a lot.
Hell of a lot.
Yeah,
because
yeah, you don't want to do that either. But if you had to choose,
yeah,
it's less of an advantage than if I know what you're throwing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been down for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I'm probably the cleanest player there is,
right?
And you know, I don't like steroid using. I don't like I don't like the electronic sign stealing. I don't like any of that. And I think if you had to pick one of the two, I'd much rather play a guy.
Absolutely.
And they still have to hit the ball, and they still don't know what I'm throwing.
That's
so,
right. That's right.
You're talking about people who are making $100 million over there for being so-called good at baseball. And, you know, I just think you put a couple people in a position where it's, you know, what's someone going to do? Someone going to set – is a player going to set – is he going to set his foot down and say, hey, you should stop this? And even if he does, it's like, you know, that doesn't
– right.
That's not going to really do very much, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just – it's unfortunate. And I think what everybody – I think the same way a fan of the game thinks.
Yeah, that's why I know you're a big fan as well as a player. Yeah,
I think the fan in me wants to say if a bank robber robbed a bank and never got caught, would he do it again?
Exactly.
You know, and he ain't going to stop.
Yeah,
until he gets busted again. And it's just me. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Well, you're coming back. You're working hard. So I know timetables are things that are evolving, right? But what's your hope this year? Sometime May, June, be back out?
You know, I'm not too sure just yet. Everything is still kind of tentative. You know, last year I looked a little far ahead, and I think that's what kind of bit me in the tail.
You learn how to go day to day, don't you?
You know, you got to take it day by day, and you got to listen to what your arm's saying to you, and you got to listen to what your body's telling
you. Absolutely,
yeah. And I think when
it's ready, it's ready.
Yeah, and I mean, and right now we're on the right track, and I think we're on the track as, you know, as soon as possible. And I think that's the biggest thing is we like I said, these guys have been smart enough.
Yeah.
For me, because you know me, I'm throw. You know, I'm trying to get back out there as soon as possible. And they've been a really big help to me. And so I think the tentative plan may be around June or something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Everything, like I said, man, so tentative with this that you wake up one day and you're stiff and you're like, damn, I'm kind of stiff.
Yeah.
And then it's, hey, we're going to give you a day or two, and then everything kind of shuffles around. So it, everything's going well. Everything's going well.
One of the bright young pitching prospects that the Rays are waiting to have this year, Brent Honeywell. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks, Brent. So a pretty busy weekend. Of course, the Lightning host the Philadelphia Flyers at Amalie Arena on Saturday. Then you have, we've got XFL football this weekend. The Vipers are at Seattle, and you might see Quentin Flowers, former USF quarterback, has a chance to play a little more than he did in the opener. And it's NBA All-Star Weekend, so busy weekend in sports. We'll talk about all of that on Monday on the podcast. Thanks for listening. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.